Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point.
Children and adults are seen huddled together in the building that's divided up into chain-link fencing that looks like a cage.
That's CBS News correspondent David Begno this morning at the U.S.-Mexico border. Outrage this weekend over immigration and the administration's practice of separating children from their parents, all before a showdown in the House later this week. Paul Manafort in jail, the Inspector General's report on the Hillary Clinton's emails, and more talk of tariffs and trade. This hour On Point, top reporters open their notebooks and look ahead to the week in Washington. You can join us on air or online. What do you see? What do you feel as you watch children separated from their parents at the border? How do you want your lawmaker to vote on immigration? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me now from Washington is from the White House in Washington, Paula Reid, Justice and Legal Affairs Correspondent for CBS News. Paula, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Thank you so much. Happy to be here.
Also with us from Washington, Michael Warren, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Michael, great to have you again as well.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me.
And with us from Washington, Dana Milbank, syndicated columnist for the Washington Post, who covers national politics. Dana Milbank, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Pleasure to be with you, Jane.
So strong reaction and loud calls seemingly from all quarters against President Trump's policy on separating children from their parents at the border. Paula Reid, this story has simply erupted. Give us the latest from Washington.
Well, let's roll back a little bit. I mean, back in April, the attorney general issued a memo to prosecutors across the country telling them that he would now have a zero tolerance policy for anyone who crosses the border illegally. So that means that everyone who crosses the border will be prosecuted. Prior to this, immigration infractions had mostly been handled as a civil matter. You get a citation and you're released. But here, they've adopted zero tolerance. If you are detained having crossed the border illegally, you will be prosecuted. And because you're going to be criminally prosecuted, you have to be arrested. And because children cannot be incarcerated for crimes, this means parents and children need to be separated. So it's been interesting to watch the evolution in terms of ownership over this policy. The attorney general has been unwavering in his ownership and his commitment to enforcing this policy. Last month, Chief of Staff John Kelly told NPR that this was, in fact, a tough deterrent, separating families in this way. But you see the president sort of trying to deflect blame to Democrats, saying this policy is the fault of Democrats, mm-hmm. when, in fact, it was his attorney general who decided to implement a new policy. And even late last night, we saw the Department Homeland Security chief even try to suggest that there is no such policy.
So a lot to unpack here. Let me play this clip. Texas Congresswoman Sheila Jackson Lee and several other Democratic lawmakers spoke to reporters after touring an immigration facility yesterday in McAllen, Texas.
When you have a mother tell you directly that she's in fear that she will never see her child again, and when the United Nations Human Rights Commission indicates to the Trump administration you're violating human rights, then you know that what we are saying today is, President Trump, cease and desist, because you are moving the arc of justice to the heap of despair and the trash heap of injustice.
So this used to be a civil matter, Michael Warren. Previous administrations made exceptions to prosecutions for adults traveling with minor children. But the Trump administration says it will not do that. Isn't that prerogative theirs to maintain?
It is. This has been the broad policy of sort of zero tolerance, with this exception for parents traveling with their kids, has been the policy of the past two presidential administrations. We should also be very specific about which parents are being separated from their children. This is not parents with children who are going to ports of entry along the border and seeking asylum there in an actual legal procedure for seeking asylum. These are parents who are crossing the border illegally are apprehended by Border Patrol agents or other federal agents and then claiming asylum after that, which is not the sort of legal way of doing it. So, frankly, the federal government and the laws as they are on the books are in something of a bind here because if those parents are seeking asylum or saying they're seeking asylum, that's a longer process. And as we've been talking about, children cannot be incarcerated for crime. So there's somewhere the children have to go. What has changed here is the Trump administration has made a decision to fully prosecute all illegal border crossings and to make that decision, which I think is a decision that they don't have to make. And a lot, you're hearing a lot of lawmakers, even on the Republican side, saying the administration does not have to decide to separate them, but they have, and it is their prerogative to make. I think the question is, as it was for the previous administrations, is this a politically viable and frankly humane decision? The Obama and Bush administrations said no. The Trump administration, for however confused it is in communicating this policy, has decided for the time being that yes, it is.
Here is President Trump speaking to reporters on the North Lawn of the White House on Friday, continuing to blame Democrats as he responded to a question about these children being taken away from their families at the border.
No, I hate it. I hate the children being taken away. The Democrats have to change their law. That's their law.
Sir, that's your own law.
Why do you keep lying about it, sir? That's the Democrats' law. We can change it tonight. We can change
You're
it right now.
I
will leave
right
here.
No.
You need their votes.
So there's the president blaming Democrats. Dana Milbank, Kirstjen Nielsen, the Secretary of Homeland Security, rejected responsibility for the separation that's happening. In a tweet, she said, "We do not have a policy of separating families at the border." She blames the media for misrepresenting the issue. What's going on here? Is this this is not U.S. law, right? This is administration policy.
Yeah, somebody better get the Secretary of Homeland Security into the same room as the Attorney General so they can decide which side of this they want to come out on. The law on immigration gives wide discretion to this administration, to any administration, to enforce policies as they see fit. The Trump administration wants to have it both ways. You saw them arguing in the case of the travel ban when people are being excluded from various majority Muslim countries. The administration's argument in court and in Supreme Court is we have virtually unlimited and unfettered freedom in how we enforce immigration law. This is really up to us and our enforcement. And now they're turning around in this instance and saying, "Oh well, our hands are tied. It's a law. We have no discretion here." And of course, they're closer to being correct in the travel ban case. They have very broad discretion. There's no law requiring them to do this. This is a policy that Jeff Sessions rolled out, and we're now seeing the consequences of it.
So Dr. Colleen Kraft, who heads the American Academy of Pediatrics, visited a shelter run by the U.S. Office of Refugee Settlement. And she reported that there were beds, there were toys, there were crayons, diaper changes were happening. But the people working at this shelter had been instructed not to pick up or touch the children to comfort them. Michael Warren, you talked about, you know, whether this is a politically viable policy and whether it's actually humane. I mean, where do we come down as a country on this question? And how do we resolve that here now?
Look, I wouldn't want my children in this environment, and I don't think any parent would. It sounds pretty awful, I think it is these kind of images, these kind of stories that can have an effect and are having an effect in terms of members of Congress speaking up. Even you're hearing different voices within the administration really not wanting to associate, saying they hate this policy. It very well could change the president's mind. We remember that this was actually the zero tolerance idea came about last year. John Kelly, now the chief of staff, then the Department of Homeland Security secretary, was pushing for it. He's much more of a hardliner on this than even the president. And the president backed off after Kelly's comments last year promoting this were sort of excoriated by members of the media. And so there's a possibility here that these images and these stories could move the president to change his mind. But at the moment, you're hearing so much confusion from the administration about why this policy is the case. You heard the president blaming the Democrats. I think that's pretty much bogus. This has to do with this internal legislative fight over funding for the border wall. And really, you could probably blame both sides of the both parties in Congress and the White House all relatively equally for that particular stalemate. But then you have people like Stephen Miller, a very influential speechwriter and advisor in the White House, who is very much views this and has pushed for this policy as a way of deterring people from coming. And frankly, it's got to be a deterrent if these news stories are getting out into Central America, which is where a lot of these are coming. But at what price? And I think that what you're hearing from members of Congress is that this is too high a price. This is really sort of federally sanctioned, for lack of a better term, child abuse.
Paula Reid, do we have the numbers? Do we know if it is deterring families crossing the border?
So we have some preliminary numbers for the first few weeks after this went into effect, because remember, you have to expect we don't necessarily have numbers for every week between April 11th when this was announced and now. But so far, the numbers did not show much of a deterrent effect. And the response from the administration and the Justice Department, which is fair, is that it may take time for the stories to get down to people who are making the decision to come here. And it may not be fair to yet judge the deterrent effect of this policy. But even Senator Collins said yesterday on Face the Nation that historically this kind of approach has not actually worked as a deterrent, because if you're facing your child being raped or recruited by a gang versus being separated from you in a U.S. government facility, you may still be apt to choose the latter. But in terms of the numbers, we're still waiting for those to come in, and the administration is asking for a few months before making a final determination about whether or not it is a deterrent.
Dana Milbank, I've got about 30 seconds before the break here. Are you surprised by the response? I'm looking at First Lady, former First Lady Laura Bush issuing a statement calling the separation of children cruel and immoral. It breaks my heart. Billy Graham, a defender of the president, called the separations disgraceful. I mean, how do you see the response here, Dana?
And you've seen it from the Catholic bishops, evangelical leaders. I think it's a broader response this time because it's so vivid, because it's so visceral, and it's really easy for people to grasp.
We are discussing the week ahead in Washington. Paula Reid, Justice and Legal Affairs Correspondent for CBS News. Michael Warren, Senior Writer at the Weekly Standard. Dana Milbank, Syndicated Columnist for the Washington Post. Listeners, we'd love to have you join us. What do you make of this issue and beyond? Are you surprised to see Paul Manafort go to jail? What's your level of confidence in the Mueller investigation? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumeraccess.org, number 3030.
The news can feel like an echo chamber. You listen to podcasts to get that perspective shift. So travel with NPR's Rough Translation. Follow familiar conversations in unfamiliar parts of the world and get a new perspective on home. Rough Translation. Find it wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're looking at the week ahead with a panel of top reporters this hour, and you can join the conversation. Do you think lawmakers can find a compromise on immigration, on border security, DACA, and the wall? What do you make of Paul Manafort jailed? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. A really great panel this hour. I'm speaking with Washington Post columnist Dana Milbank, CBS News Justice and Legal Affairs Correspondent Paula Reid, and the Weekly Standard's senior writer Michael Warren. I want to play these two clips. The first one, Attorney General Jeff Sessions, in a speech to law enforcement officers in Indiana on Thursday. Here he is turning to the Bible to defend the policy of separating immigrant children from their parents after they enter the United States illegally.
If you violate the law, you subject yourself to prosecution. And I would cite you to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government, because God has ordained the government for his purposes.
And yesterday on ABC's This Week, former White House advisor Steve Bannon criticized the Catholic Church for its stance on immigration after Pope Francis tweeted last week, quote, "Children must be able to play, study, and grow in a peaceful environment. Woe to anyone who stifles their joyful impulse to hope." Here's Bannon.
I'm a Catholic. No, the Catholic Church is one of the big instigators in the open borders, and the Pope has been driving the migrant issue in Europe. No, so you, no. It's, by the way, that the Pope is not infallible when it comes to public policy, and that's a public policy issue.
So there first, the Attorney General Jeff Sessions saying, "If you violate the law, this is what happens." And then Steve Bannon, of course, always the provocateur. But Michael Warren, what do you make of these two quite interesting statements?
Well, I don't put much stock in what Steve Bannon has to say, frankly. So I'll just address what Jeff Sessions says, which is, I think. On its face is pretty absurd. I mean, is he saying that every single government decision is therefore ordained by God? Government is run by human beings who are all flawed. I think we've pretty much established that this decision, this discretionary decision by the Trump administration, is not in and of itself, or because it comes from this government, is therefore a good policy. I do think, however, that this is more complicated than partisans on either side are making it out to be. The fact is that the law does dictate that people who enter the country illegally, it is a misdemeanor, and they should be prosecuted. Now, of course, the federal government makes discretionary decisions all the time about which crimes and which people who violate those laws to prosecute. I think that there are a lot of loopholes. There are a lot of problems with the current immigration regime, and most of this falls to Congress and Congress's sort of inability to really pass any kind of legislation, whether it's small piecemeal or something big and comprehensive, to change and to alter the way that our laws on immigration are.
Addressing the National Sheriffs Association convention in New Orleans, Secretary of Homeland Security Kirstjen Nielsen says, quote, "Illegal actions have consequences." She says those who commit a crime go to jail, regardless of whether they have children. Let's get some calls in here. Charlotte in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Charlotte. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call, Jane. Mm-hmm. This is not only a federally sanctioned child abuse. It is a war crime. You don't have to be a child psychologist or someone who works with children or even a parent. As a human being, we have to stop this. We cannot remain silent. It should be apolitical. It should be nonpartisan. It should stop immediately. The blaming and buck passing that's going on is ridiculous, and these children are being permanently damaged. This is child abuse, folks. Please, please, please take action. Speak out. Stand up. Write. Call everybody you can think of in office in March. I mean, we can't let this continue.
Charlotte, thank you so much. I do appreciate your passion there. Let's get Mike in here from West Palm Beach, Florida. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call, Jane. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it.
Yes.
I also appreciate the spotlight being put on this issue, because this really is a dangerous policy. And according to the Washington Post, our president's administration handed thousands of Central American children brought across the border over human trafficking rings without their parents' knowledge. It's so weird because, you know, Donald Trump wasn't even elected yet when it was reported in January of 2016, but he still managed to get away with this. And thank goodness for the honest coverage on this matter and the outrage it's generated. It reminds me so much of the DACA recipients that we forgot all about. Thank you, Jane.
Mike, thank you very much for calling. Let's get another Mike in here from Maxton, North Carolina. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, Jane. How are you doing?
Well, thank you, sir. Go ahead.
I wanted to say to the issue that to me, where you got a government sitting in place and you don't have anybody that wants to take responsibility for this. I mean, you got the Homeland Security person saying that we don't have a policy, that this is not us doing this. And then you got Jeff Sessions using scripture to defend this. And then you got Donald Trump saying that it's the Democrats that's responsible for this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the worst part of our government in the history, almost, of our government.
A lot of contradictions there, Mike. I do appreciate your call. Thank you so much. Dana Milbank, jump back in here, because President Trump seemed to be linking this situation at the border to crime. In a series of Twitter posts today, the president claimed falsely, I might say, that crime in Germany is on the rise, and he railed against immigration policies in Europe. The New York Times reports that Germany's crime numbers are actually the lowest since 1992, according to the most recent German data available. Can you talk about that for a moment, please, Dana?
Well, a bit reminiscent of that time in the rally last year when he started talking about what happened last night in Sweden, I think it was. The president at this point wants to change the subject away from this and where he feels much stronger and where he is stronger, talking about MS-13 and sanctuary cities and Democrats being soft on illegal immigration. The problem that he's up against here is – the thing he was railing against is catch and release. This is why Democrats were soft on immigration, or the Obama administration was, although certainly the Obama administration was doing a heck of a lot of deporting. But so the alternative to catch and release is what we are seeing right now, unless you're going to vastly expand jail capacity and find some way to have children incarcerated in cells with their parents. But that opens up all kinds of other troubles. So we are actually seeing a very I think a very clear policy, and yes, there's some confusion from different parts of the administration, but I think Jeff Sessions has quite rightly taken complete ownership of this policy. And you mentioned his appeal to scriptures, and Michael didn't mention this, but that passage from Romans that he cited has also been used in this country to justify slavery, to justify segregation, was used elsewhere for apartheid, to justify Nazism. So I think it is that kind of a that's what makes this so vivid. It's both the what seems to be the abject cruelty of the policy, and then the sort of outrageous claims about it. I think that combination has come together to create this storm.
Several listeners have responded to this on our website. DJ says, is this what happened on Ellis Island? We are a nation of immigrants. Let's fix this and provide the path for those who show up on our shores to get into this country easy and quickly. Another listener says, this has nothing to do with being an immigrant or jumping the queue. This is about children's rights. Children should not endure punishment that causes them a hardship, emotional, psychological, physical, nor should they be made to suffer by a government who wishes to punish alleged crimes of their parents. Paula Reid, all of this comes in advance of a meeting that the president plans with House Republicans this week, actually on Tuesday, in advance of votes on immigration legislation. Talk about these two competing bills that are headed to the floor. What are their proposals, and what do you expect to see this week?
Well, it'll be interesting to see this sort of unusual meeting where the president will huddle with top House Republicans in the hope of getting some clarity on whether the president supports various legislative proposals. Now, there are at least two competing bills headed to the floor. One is a hardline immigration measure that is actually not expected to succeed. And then there is this compromise version crafted by House Republican leadership that would extend some protections to so-called Dreamers. Now, last week, at one point, the president said he would not sign that moderate bill that was even embraced by House Speaker Paul Ryan. But then later in the day, the White House issued a statement contradicting that, saying actually the president will support that. And what you see here, though, is the president, he made those comments when he was out here in the White House North Lawn speaking to reporters. See, maybe he wasn't fully fully read in on the text of both bills. But hopefully Republicans will be able to get some clarity on where he stands. But he is in a tough spot, as are a lot of Republicans. because this issue is sort of splitting a lot of their core supporters. You have moderate Republicans, you have evangelicals, you even have a former Republican first lady coming out against the fact that they are separating families at the border because of this zero tolerance policy. But then you also have immigration hardliners. I mean, you heard earlier in the broadcast Steve Bannon saying, look, we don't want any kind of compromise unless we get our wall. So it's this meeting is hopefully going to provide some clarity on where the president and these House Republican leaders are on a possible compromise. But they are they're in a difficult spot here in terms of their base.
On Friday, President Trump told Fox and Friends host Steve Doocy that he's considering two immigration measures, a hardline draft written by Virginia Congressman Bob Goodlatte, and legislation billed as a compromise between moderate and conservative House Republicans. Here he is.
I'm looking at both of them. I certainly wouldn't sign the more moderate one.
What does the bill have to have?
I need a bill that gives this country tremendous border security. I have to have that. We have to get rid of catch and release.
Does that mean the wall?
We have to have the wall. If we don't have the wall, there's no bill.
The White House later said President Trump misunderstood the question. He was referring to an effort led by moderate House Republicans to force a series of immigration votes. Let me play this clip. Congressman Will Hurd, a Republican from Texas, whose district covers a majority of his state's border with Mexico, telling NPR's Morning Edition today he doesn't think the immigration bills up for consideration in the House this week effectively deal with the administration's zero tolerance policy.
There is nothing that I've read in either one of these two bills that we're allegedly voting on this week that would prevent this policy from going forward. You don't need legislation. The administration can do this and stop this policy right now.
Michael Warren, what do you see here with these bills moving forward?
Well, I think I take Dana's point earlier about the clarity from Attorney General Jeff Sessions on this, but I think that the confusion comes from the president's own position, whether it is these bills that House Republicans are considering, and how that might affect this particular policy at the border. And I think in that vacuum of confusion, you have people like Jeff Sessions, people like John Kelly, again, a very much a hardliner on immigration, and Stephen Miller as well, going into that vacuum and really determining policy and having the rest of the administration, people like Kirstjen Nielsen, who is now sort of coming, sort of following the party line now with some comments on Monday morning, I think that is a big problem. And the fact that the president seems to ping pong back on the policy, on what he really wants to do, and doesn't offer clarity about what he really prioritizes. Is it he says that he wants some kind of deal for the DACA kids. He says he needs border wall. He says and other border security measures. He says, or at least people in his administration say, they want to ultimately lower total legal immigration levels. These are a lot of competing interests, and Congress has a lot of different views on this. And he seems to be not interested in hashing out those differences, but sort of unclear about where he stands, because that will drive where a lot of the Republican House conference goes on this. Mm-hmm. They're looking to the president for leadership, and he seems to be looking to Congress to figure it all out.
Let me get a caller in here, Derek in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Derek. I'm glad you called.
Yes. Hi, Jane, and to your guests. As an independent voter, I think that the Republican Party has almost irrevocably damaged themselves almost for a generation with what is going on. And people need to remember that Jeff Sessions has a history of appearing to be ridiculously racist. And a lot of people were afraid that the very thing that's happening now, that was brought up at like this dude's confirmation hearing. And so I think like the part of the seduction perhaps of white supremacy is just that everybody should just get over whatever is happening to them. But these children, their parents, extended family, and people who were concerned that Jeff Sessions would do something like this will carry this for a long time. And that does not bode well for the Republican Party at all.
Derek, thank you very much. Dana Milbank, I mean, to Derek's point, how do you see this issue affecting the Republican Party, specifically the border situation, separating families, how it will impact pending legislation this week?
Well, the first thing is we've all learned that making any sort of prediction in this era is foolhardy. So we don't really know what will happen on either of those. So I have to begin with that preface. But with the in terms of the future of the Republican Party, well, certainly if this is what the Republican Party is, it's causing itself tremendous long-term damage in terms of the changing demographics. It's an absolute loser in the long run. It's not entirely obvious that in the short run it's a loser. Because you know, there is this very motivated segment of America that's we are deeply divided by race, and white Americans, particularly those who haven't gone to college, quite rightly feel that they are being left behind, and they see America becoming a majority minority nation. This is a much bigger issue than Trump, but certainly, he has shown that there is some political potency in motivating those people. Now, in terms of what's going to happen in Congress, you always sort of want to bet that nothing's going to happen in Congress. And the smart money on the Hill says that, well, since that discharge petition failed, that was basically legalizing the Dreamers, the DACA program, that neither of these the bills, either the one the hardliners like or the attempt at a compromise, will become law because there won't be enough votes on either. It'll be fairly easy to stop. But certainly you never know what might happen. But, you know, there have been the truth is there is a consensus, a reasonable consensus on immigration in this country. There have been bipartisan efforts that were they allowed to come to a vote would quite easily pass. But they never seem to get that vote.
We are discussing what's to come this week in Washington and beyond with a terrific panel, Paula Reed, CBS News, Michael Warren, The Weekly Standard, and Dana Milbank, syndicated columnist for The Washington Post. Listeners, you can join us. What do you expect from the House and Senate as they put the Inspector General's report under a microscope this week? Does it totally exonerate President Trump, as he told reporters on Friday? What's on your mind as we look ahead this week? I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here, host of How I Built This. And on our latest episode, how Chip Wilson turned workout clothes into a fashion statement. And along the way, built a breakout brand, Lululemon, now worth billions. You can listen to How I Built This on Apple Podcasts or however you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're looking ahead to the week in Washington and around the country, and you can join the conversation. Are you with the president on his tariffs? What about a trade war? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. A terrific panel this hour, Michael Warren from The Weekly Standard, Dana Milbank from The Washington Post, and Paula Reed from CBS News. Just want to get this out there. News just hitting the wire. The Supreme Court has brought down a decision in two highly anticipated gerrymandering cases today. The Supreme Court will let Maryland and Wisconsin redistrict their maps as they will. That ruling stands for now, so no change in that gerrymandering case. We'll get more on that later. Let's turn now to Paul Manafort. Here's President Trump during a press gaggle on the White House lawn on Friday, attempting to distance himself from the former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort. Here he is.
Manafort has nothing to do with our campaign. But I feel so, I tell you, I feel a little badly about it. They went back 12 years to get things that he did 12 years ago. You know, Paul Manafort worked for me for a very short period of time. He worked for Ronald Reagan. He worked for Bob Dole. He worked for John McCain, or his firm did. He worked for many other Republicans. He worked for me, what, for 49 days or something? A very short period of time.
In fact, Paul Manafort spent 144 days as President Trump's campaign manager during the spring and summer of 2016. Michael Warren, President Trump both defending and distancing himself from Paul Manafort. What do you make of these latest developments in the Russia probe, the Mueller investigation? What do you see here?
Well, we should also note that it's not just the number of days. Of course, Paul Manafort was instrumental I remember reporting on this at the time, of getting Trump through the Republican National Convention. There was a real feeling, a real moment, even some momentum, that he could be stopped by dissident Republicans before the convention from getting the nomination. And Manafort was brought in specifically to do that. So he was a very important part of the Trump campaign, no matter how many days he was there. And there's no denying that. Look, I think that clearly, Robert Mueller has been playing hardball with Paul Manafort. He's gotten Rick Gates, Paul Manafort's business partner, to flip, has been unable to do that so far with Manafort. I think you can read this any way you want to. If you can see it as Mueller sort of getting desperate and trying to get Manafort to flip so he can have something tying closer to the Trump campaign with regard to Russian meddling, or you can look at it as showing that Mueller rather continues to focus in and use that vice on these associates of the Trump campaign in order to find out the truth. The problem is, as always, is that Mueller knows much more than we do about the evidence and information that he has. But I do think that it's apparent that the Trump world, Trump team, seems to be getting, as they always do, a little bit more nervous, a little bit more frustrated with the way that the investigation is going. And then you're hearing more and more calls, as with all these developments, for it to wrap up.
Mm-hmm. Let's get Stanley in here from Taunton, Massachusetts. Hi, Stanley. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Jane. How are you today?
I'm well. Thank you. Go ahead.
Yes. Well, from watching and reading the New York Times, CNN, NBC, MSNBC, and also Fox News, you just got to get that so you could have both sides. I feel like this is a tipping point for Manafort. The reason why I say that is because due to the fact that he was caught witness tampering, I mean, that's the reason why he was sent off to prison on Friday. I believe with the fact that these two people are going to go against him, I feel like this is the time, like, I feel like for him, he really can't get out of the vice he's in, because even though Gallinari said on State of the Union yesterday that, oh, the president has could pardon Manafort after this whole thing is over, even though he can get pardoned federally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do know the state can really kick him in his tush. So
do you think Manafort's on the verge of flipping, Stanley? What do you make of it?
I believe he is, because, like I said, with the circumstances, mm-hmm. even if he gets a pardon from the president, he is still going to get kicked in the tush by both, I believe, in Virginia, if I'm correct, and also in Maryland.
All right, Stanley, let me turn it to Dana Milbank. What do you say? How do you respond to our caller, Stanley?
Well, the Manafort development is an important one. It's very hard to know whether that means that he's going to turn against Trump. You know, in the larger picture, we can sort of see this steady but incremental process. Being a progress being made by Mueller. In the at the same time, we see with each step of the way just this slight erosion in support for the ongoing Mueller probe. And so the Trump administration, I think, has been somewhat successful in maybe not discrediting it, but making it appear that it has a partisan element to it, and that he certainly seized on the inspection. Director General report from the Justice Department last week. There were components of that with the FBI agents' unprofessional behavior that play right into the president's hand on that. Of course, the larger point that there was no evidence of political interference certainly does not help the president's point. But I think he is succeeding in muddying the waters, even as Mueller is making progress.
Here's President Trump on Friday telling reporters gathered on the North Lawn of the White House that the Department of Justice Inspector General's report that Dana just referred to totally exonerated him in the Mueller probe. Andrew Feinberg, the White House correspondent for Breakfast Media, told President Trump the IG report had nothing to do with the Russia investigation.
If you read the IG report, I've been totally exonerated.
It had nothing to do with collusion. It had nothing to do with
that. Take a look at it. Take a look at the investigation. Take a look at how it started. Take a look at the horrible statements that Peter Strzok, the chief investigator, said. And take a look at what he did with Hillary Clinton. Take a look at
it. Take a look at it. That has nothing to do with collusion. Why are you lying about it, sir?
Why are you lying about it, sir? Paula Reid, what do you make of this? And you interviewed Rudy Giuliani recently. Tell us about it.
That's right. We actually talk frequently. He is a source that I speak with a lot. He's trying to sort of obfuscate a few issues here. The first thing is he says that the biggest issue everyone has is are you going to pardon Paul Manafort? Because that would really take the heat off of this big question about whether or not he will flip. And Giuliani says that he's advised the president not to pardon anyone ahead of the Mueller probe wrapping up, but there could be pardons on the table after this wraps up. Now, when it comes to a lot of the other things that Giuliani says, you're talking about collusion, obstruction of justice, all of this, it's sort of trying to divert from the two big questions, one of which is, will the president pardon people? And the other is whether or not the president will sit down with special counsel investigators. And Giuliani tells me that he will make a decision about that on July 4th. But based on what he saw in the inspector general report, he now sees that maybe it's not a great idea for his client to do that. He has questions about the integrity of the investigation. I challenged him on that, saying, I think that sounds a little pretextual. Because for a long time you've been on the fence and you're kind of looking for a reason, but he doubled down. Ultimately, he says he'll make a decision by July 4th.
So, Paula, the Senate Judiciary Committee, they're holding hearings, I think this afternoon, right, to examine the IG's report. The House committees will hold a joint hearing on this sometime tomorrow. I mean, where does this go from here? What are you watching for?
Well, the investigations into the investigations continue. It's not surprising that they called Horowitz, the inspector general, up to the Hill, FBI Director Wray. They will both be up there to discuss the findings and discuss what they're going to change going forward. I don't think this is the final word on the Clinton investigation. There will continue to be calls for a special counsel and other efforts to sort of bring all of that back into the public consciousness. And then you have the next phase of the inspector general report, which is investigating the origins of the Russia probe.
Michael Warren, jump back in here. What do you make of the president's response there in that clip? Is he cherry picking facts to his liking? Is he playing to his base? What do you make of this, controlling the narrative?
I think he's conflating the issues, and I think the very serious issues that this IG report uncovered about the way that the FBI conducted itself during the investigation into Hillary Clinton's email server, conflating that with the Russian investigation. And I think that conflation is helped along by a friendly media environment that seeks to do that. Look, there is no question that the bad behavior by people like Peter Strzok, the sort of boneheaded decisions by FBI Director James Comey don't reflect well on them at all. But there are a lot of factors here that suggest that of course, the president and his team are not exonerated by a report showing some political bias by members of the FBI. In fact, Robert Mueller fired Peter Strzok from his team, from leading his investigative team, once he apparently discovered that the issues involved and some of the previous issues involved with him and an IG investigation. So it's a conflation that I think helps helps the president make a political point. And I think I agree with Danny. He has been very successful at muddying the waters on Mueller. But at the end of the day, I don't think Mueller's approval ratings matter as much as whatever he does at the end of this investigation, whether it's a report or more indictments or what have you. And then we'll be able to judge the Mueller investigation and whether Trump or Team Trump is exonerated.
So speak to that, Dana Milbank, to wrap us up on this point. The inspector general's report, the president said the report totally exonerated him. In fact, the report did not address any allegations of collusion or obstruction of justice related to the Russia probe. Your reaction, Dana?
Well, of course, that claim was preposterous. I mean, it's all out there available for anybody to look at. And you're right. The Senate this afternoon. I'll be at the House hearing on this tomorrow. Michael is right. This is not the court of public opinion doesn't necessarily matter. It's a question of what does Mueller come up with in the end. It appears, at least for the moment, that there had been some murmurs that House Republican conservatives were getting some traction in their interest in having Mueller sacked, having the investigation terminated. It is almost impossible to see that happening now, despite this sort of steady but small erosion in support.
I've got to get in tariffs and a possible trade war as we wrap up the hour here. Here's President Trump announcing on Friday that he would levy a 25% tariff on up to $50 billion worth of Chinese imports. During a conversation with Fox and Friends host Steve Doocy, he downplayed criticism that his actions would lead to a trade war.
The trade war was started many years ago by them, and the United States lost.
So okay. You're saying we're on the
There's
losing
no trade
end
war.
Of it?
Well, no, there is no trade war. They've taken so much.
Michael, you've been closely following all this. President Trump just approved tariffs on $50 billion worth of Chinese goods. China retaliated, hit the U.S. with $34 billion worth of tariffs, with more to come. India just responded with plans to hit back over U.S. tariffs on steel and aluminum. What do you make of this, and what are you looking for this week on this?
Well, if this is not a trade war, I'd hate to see what a trade war looks like. Look, I think that it's interesting to note how different the president's and the administration's rhetoric on this. We remember when there was first discussion about the aluminum and steel tariffs, and then later the China actions, the president was saying that trade wars are easy to win. He's now shifted slightly here, making this kind of argument that China has been eating our lunch for decades. I think the China actions, and if you read the report that the administration put out on China, it's very convincing of what China has been doing in terms of violating sort of international norms when it comes to trade, when it comes to theft of intellectual property, and these sorts of things. I think the difference is our increased tariffs the way to go. And what you're hearing, not just from critics of the Trump administration, mm-hmm. but even from people within or formerly within, as the case was with Gary Cohn, the former National Economic Council director, it's a belief that tariffs aren't the best way to achieve a better outcome from what I think we ought to all agree is not a good current situation with regard to China. And that, I think, is a debate that's happening even within the White House. But the president's views on this are, of course, what end up winning the day. And he's very much about increasing tariffs.
Let me get Joe in here from Lake Placid, New York. Hi, Joe. I don't have much time, but I want to get your view.
Right. Thank you, Jane. How are you today?
Fine.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to say I think it's high time that the United States has taken this type of a stance toward China. I feel less that it should be applied to other allies. China has taken so much in the United States in terms of stolen intellectual property, et cetera, and sending over painted drywall, sheetrock, whatever term you'd use for it, and cheapened steel. And then I was really shocked when England or Great Britain turned Taiwan back over to China, considering their human rights abuses.
I'm going to jump in, Joe, because the clock is against me, but I do appreciate your time. And I hear you say it's high time we put tariffs on Chinese goods. Dana Milbank, finish us off here. Here we are in a series of trade disputes, even with our closest allies. As you wrote last week, a president with the guts to stand up to Canada. What's the calculus here? I mean, the president will probably ride a successful economic wave into the midterms. Is this a problematic issue here?
Well, it certainly could be. I mean, we're in, if it's not a trade war, at least a trade skirmish right now, and everybody's trying to decide what ammunition to fire at the other side. Now, I think there's a lot of support for the actions taking place towards China, certainly more support for this than the president's previous efforts to exempt a very problematic Chinese offender. The real question is what's going to happen, not with China, but with our allies, and Justin Trudeau, who is the president, seems to like significantly less than the leaders of China and North Korea, is threatening his retaliation begins July 1st. Is that going to come from the Europeans? Are we going to start blocking European automobiles? Then you're in a real trade war, and that really jeopardizes the economy.
Great information today. Great panel. Dana Milbank, syndicated columnist with Washington Post. So pleased to have you, Dana. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Michael Warren, senior writer for the Weekly Standard. Always great to have you with us, Michael. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Jane.
Paula Reed had to jump off. She had some work to do. Justice and legal affairs correspondent for CBS News. We appreciated her insight today. Listeners, you can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. And thank you for your calls and insight today. Coming up tomorrow, we'll speak with Cardinal Daniel DiNardo, president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. He'll talk about the family separations at the border. Until then, I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.